Africans at home and throughout the diaspora. Unity is strength. We got the power.
Stop the fussing and the fighting. Now the time to do the right thing.
We for unity. Come.
Stop the fussing and the fighting. Now the time to do the right thing.
In the spirit of umoja, embrace with love.
Let's do it right now. We've got to do it right. Stop the fussing and the
right
fighting.
Now, right now.
Now the time to do the right thing. Let's do it right now. We've got to do it right.
Right now.
That's right. That's right. We are going to do it right. This is Jamal Rogers, your host with Voices from the Battlefield. And this is the place where we talk about the folks who are on the battlefield and they are fighting for democracy. They're fighting for justice. They are fighting for freedom. I mean, liberation. And so, this is appropriate that today is Juneteenth, and many of us see that as our Liberation Day, although it is a process, it's not just an event, but certainly I think a lot of us have been using Juneteenth as a way to talk about liberation. So happy Juneteenth to everybody. And today we have a special guest, Mickey Dean from Kansas City. Mickey has been a longtime organizer and activist in the Kansas City area, one of the founding members of the Kansas City Black United Front. And, you know, one of the pillars with, what we might have to get some of these folks on later on, the W.E. Du Bois Learning Center that's been around for decades, helping young people in their growth and development. So welcome to the show, Mickey.
Well, thank you, Sister Jamala. It's a pleasure to be in such distinguished company.
So I really want to talk about, since we are in the throes of the South African elections, what your thoughts are about that. And we won't go into a whole lot of that because my listeners remember on African Liberation Day, we had Bill Fletcher and Lee Akute come and talk about Africa and what's going on the continent. And we didn't spend a whole lot of time on South Africa because we are going to have them come back later on in the summer after the coalition government gets settled and we get to see some trajectories about where that's going. But Mickey, the National Black United Front played a very pivotal role in the U.S. campaign against apartheid. I mean, we had the boycott, ultra boycott against the entertainers that were performing in Sun City. We raised money. I know the Organization for Black Struggle, we raised money to both the Pan-African Congress as well as the African National Congress. So we just felt like we were there. I mean, we were fighting just like, not just like the brothers and sisters in South Africa, but we certainly were playing a supportive role in helping to bring down apartheid. But I guess the other part of that is too the divestment piece that we were very instrumental in. So let's talk about, you know, what that was like in Kansas City, but also just your view about what's happening, because this is the 30th anniversary of the independence of South Africa. And so we have some expanse to look at in terms of what they've done, how they've done it, and where it looks like they're going or not going. So what is your sense of, you know, what has happened?
Like you said, Jamal, you know, we were here in Kansas City. We actually, the NBAF formed what we call the Anti-Apartheid Network, which was basically a coalition of groups, not only, civil rights organizations, there were labor organizations, there were religious groups, and basically we all came together in opposition to apartheid. Now, as far as NBAF goes, at that time, you know, we were having African Liberation Day every year. And at times we brought in speakers from the ANC. We brought in speakers from the Pan-Africanist Congress. We had a speaker from the ZAPO, the Zanian People's Organization. And I think our tendency was more towards the Pan-Africanist Congress and the ZAPO, because we always had some doubts about the ANC, about the Freedom Charter, what it stood for, the fact that it seemed to focus a lot on reconciliation with the oppressors. And that, you know, posed some problems for us, but our position was that that's up to the, you know, the South African people to determine who their leadership would be. And even though we had our own perspectives, one of the things that, you know, it was easy for us to say, once Mandela took over the ANC that ANC should do this, should do that. Because, you know, we're sitting here, you know, in the comfort of our homes, and it's hard for us to say what they should or shouldn't do. I do know just from looking at other situations that there is some challenge in moving from a liberation movement to actually governance, you know, and, cause we saw this in Cuba, and we've seen it in other places that, you know, at one point you're the opposition and now you're the government, you're responsible for everything. And that makes a lot of difference. Matter of fact, you know, I had some conversation years ago with Chokwe, because that was a situation in Jackson, Mississippi, you know, right, where they went from sort of an opposition to now, you know, you're running the city. So now, you know, it's a whole different perspective. So, that in itself, was an issue. The other thing is that, you know, regardless of what you feel about the ANC, for a lot of the masses of people in South Africa, things did not change drastically and have not over the years. And that's probably due to a number of reasons. And of course, there was a lot of discussion over the years about the ANC, about corruption and the political direction they were headed in. And so I think, you know, what has resulted, is what we see now. I think in this past election, they only got about 40% of the vote where they were used to being the, majority. And really the party that they now have to form a government with is this Democratic Alliance, which is, I mean, basically the party of apartheid in South Africa. Then there's Inkatha, which back in the day, you know, we just had a hard line on Inkatha. You know, I don't know what they're up to today, but the Democratic Alliance, I mean, we're clear who they are. And so it just remains to be seen what's going to happen in this coalition government. I noticed that, Julius Malema's group, the, Economic Freedom Fighters, they did not join this coalition government. And I think it had a lot to do with the fact that they were not going to join a government with the Democratic Alliance. So I don't know. It just remains to be seen how this is going to work out. I haven't followed it as closely as some people, but, I am concerned about what's going to happen and actually what's been happening in South Africa.
Well, I know that, over the years, I have been a range of emotions. I've been disappointed. I've been angry. I've been, sad, because I think the masses of people in South Africa deserve so much more after being under such a brutal yoke of oppression for so many years. And then, to really put their faith in a government and Nelson Mandela as well, that things were going to be decisively different, that their lives would be dramatically changed. And, I think in many ways, some folks in South Africa will say that it actually has gotten worse. So that's a disappointment. And so I wasn't surprised that the ANC has lost popular support by the masses of people. And I think you have to earn that respect and support. Mm-hmm. And they have not proven that they were worthy of that support. Then when I saw the Democratic Alliance, I'm like, man, what is this, where we come to the now? Because I, you know, given where the level of organization is and given the level of corruption, in the government, the worst case scenario could be sort of a new apartheid in terms of the Democratic Alliance, because what are they doing? They're trying to get power, you know, mm-hmm. And a lot of the land still belongs to them. I mean, it's just like, what is going on? And I think for me, as an organizer, always thinking about governance, like how do we as Black people govern, and how can we start the practice of democratic governance right now in our organization? The people who've heard me talk and give workshops know that that's my big thing. It's like, you start that practicing of democracy in your own organization, so that then you can scale as the situation changes. But when I look at South Africa, I know it wasn't easy. I know they stepped into knee deep in bullshit. Mm-hmm. But when you started to see how they were moving on some of the reforms that they had promised, right. I'm like, okay, these two steps are not going to take us to this destination. So what are we doing here? And then, you know, I had friends here in St. Louis that kept me abreast of it. Cause like you, so much stuff happened locally, nationally, you can't hardly be involved in the international stuff. And so they would send me like what they thought were critical articles for me to understand what was going on in South Africa. And, you know, I just was shaking my head. But again, I think those are lessons to be learned. And I'm hoping that, you know, some of the newer activists and younger activists that are coming up to the fore in South Africa, are not trying to replicate a system, but trying to bring about the kind of liberation that they had dreamed about, during their anti-apartheid movement.
And we also know that the imperialists, particularly the Western governments, are just not going to allow, you know, these governments to do whatever they want. I mean, they always have a hand in this, you know, in terms of trying to subvert any type of revolutionary movement. I mean, we've seen that everywhere that there's been, revolutionary movements, Cuba, Venezuela, Nicaragua. You can expect that in the Sahel region with those, with the countries that are trying to break off from French imperialism. So that's the other thing, is that they're always going to be up against opposition, because one of the things the imperialists don't want, they don't want to see a unified Africa. They don't want to see, because of the wealth of the continent, they don't want to see it under, black control, unless it's neocolonial black control, but they don't want to see it under the, you know, the control of any people with, you know, any revolutionary tendencies. And they've seen what they would do, you know, peace, like people like Nkrumah, Patrice Lumumba, and Thomas Sankara. I mean, they are very serious about trying to destroy any movement towards, liberation. So that's another factor that these, and that's why, you know, Nkrumah basically, talks so much about a unified Africa. You know, he said if Ghana tried to do this alone, it's just going to be very, very difficult. And of course, that's one of the things that the imperialists just don't want to see as a unified Africa.
And I think you're right about, you know, you can't have liberation in a vacuum. But my hope and was that these folks understood that. I mean, that they had seen what happened in, with, you know, Puma, with, you know, Juan Michel, all the folks that were like liberators. Mm-hmm. What happened to them and what happened to the countries that they were trying to liberate? These are lessons to be learned. So you already go into the door understanding that. And so I just, again, disappointed that some of the historic lessons were not taken into the new government. And so I'm just really have some anxiety about the coalition government. And so we'll see. We'll see, but I think it's going to be very disheartening and disillusioning if it reverts back to a modern apartheid, as all the people have done. Cause then, you know, people don't want to like participate. Like, we all that we did there, and look what happened. But mm-hmm. I think we always have to be on guard for folks both, even when we're talking about the Palestinian struggle. Like, what are we doing here to make this government accountable, who has its hands all over the globe, its tentacles like crushing and, you know, manipulating. And so for us, and we've always heard this, Mickey, and you know this, from people struggling, like, here's what you can do for your government. Don't, you know, support mm-hmm. us that way. And they've always said that, like, you don't have to come here, you don't have, but your government has a particular role, and that's what you need to be mindful of, and that's what you need to do. So the demands now coming out of Gaza is, you know, the U.S. needs to stop spending billions to Israel, mm-hmm. you know, military aid. And so that's a role that I think we should understand here in the U.S. because it is comfortable to look over there and say, yeah, we're not doing, but then when they look at us, what mm-hmm. are y'all not doing to hold your government accountable?
So, right, absolutely.
Yeah, I just think it's a very serious situation that we need to keep ears and eyes on and about, and hopefully, you know, for South Africa, not necessarily the parties, people of South Africa will rise up and keep those people in check. And keep apartheid in check. these other folks are well organized. When I saw some of their campaigns, in literature, they got the money to do a lot of stuff. And so, it's a situation to be watched. But let's talk about, the National Black United Front, because it was founded in 1980. So this is going to be the 45th anniversary, and the upcoming national gathering will be in Kansas City. And I do remember what it's like to host a national convention. So, I mean, it's exciting on one hand, but it's a lot of work.
Let me just interject this. You know, our chairperson, Sister Shapika Small, you know, the last in-person convention we held in Kansas City, I believe was in 2017 or 2018. Now, we did do one, virtual during COVID. We had a couple of virtual conventions, one in Houston. But one of the things that she said, you know, I'm just looking forward to this convention and just enjoying it. And I said, you don't know. I said, when you're hosting a convention, there's no such thing as enjoying it. I mean, you're putting out fires. I mean, don't expect that. You know, it's work.
It's work. And a lot of times, as you know from doing it, it's really somewhat of a haze. I mean, you were there. You could say you were there, but you really can't remember any of the memorable stuff because you were so busy doing the footwork. So I know that it's gonna be fun for other people, and that's the whole reason that we put that work in, so that people come out of it with a memorable experience and they come back with information.
But we're still looking forward to hosting. We always do. This will be I always joke with our national chair Kofi Taharker about who's hosted the most conventions, and they've hosted 8, and this will be our 8th.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. And as you know, Jamala, I mean, if you go back to, and I wasn't at the first convention, Conrad Warren, who was our longtime chair, provided me with a lot of the documents from that initial convention. There was 1,500 people or something in Brooklyn.
It was amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, the movement, it's not what it was 45 years ago, you know, in terms of the, I guess what we would call the revolutionary nationalist Pan-Africanist strand, whatever you want to, however you want to refer to it. And things are a lot different. There are a lot of, I think things that are promising on the horizon in terms of what some of these young people are doing. But I'm just saying that the fact that we're still here, you know, after 45 years, we may be pared down a bit from what we were once upon a time. But, you know, we're still here. We're still trying to fight the fight. And so in that regard, we're looking forward to hosting this convention.
Okay. We'll talk a little bit about the formation of NBUF and, you know, why it came to be and at its height, how many chapters it was, and what were some of the campaigns that we worked on.
Well, you know, from what I recall, and I know this was the case in Kansas City, was that the Black Power movement, I guess you could say in a sense, had been defeated in the sense that a lot of it had been suppressed, and then there are other situations. I'm always reminded of that movie, I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker. And there's a scene in there where I can only remember him as Link from Mod Squad, but he was head of the Black Power movement, and they came looking for some forces to help move on some people that were hurting the Black community. And he asked him, he said, well, you know, what happened to your movement? And he said, well, we went down to the government building to protest, but they were hiring that day. And so what happened is that, you know, a lot of people, just sort of left the movement and went into mainstream media, mainstream America. And so what happened was that I think around the late 70s, early 80s, there wasn't much of a national presence of unity of the, those national liberation self-determining groups. And I think there was a need for a Black United Front. I know here in Kansas City, you know, we weren't going to join SCLC or NAACP, nothing against them, but their philosophical outlook was just different than ours.
Right.
And so when we heard about the formation of the National Black United Front, it was something that appealed to us, those of us that wanted to continue that tradition of self-determination. And so it was necessary at that time, I thought, to form something on a national scale to try to capture that tendency in the movement. And so that's why I think it was necessary for, you know, MBUF to form. And basically that's how we started out as a united front, you know, Black United Front, which sort of later evolved into more of an organization, but we did start out as a front. And I just think it was something that was necessary at the time. I still think it's necessary.
Absolutely. Because when I think about, how we honor and keep radical traditions going, certainly MBUF is there. To speak to, I know it wasn't the full analysis of where our movement is now, but in terms of like, this happened with each generation, it seems to be, in my opinion, a further move away from Black radical traditions because of what's going on externally. So mm-hmm. We do have these younger people coming in, with a different view, but also, the fact that, the whole way that they've been socialized and politicized, we have to account for that as they make their move. And for a lot of them, it's about entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. So when you look at how that has impacted our Black radical movement, you see the fingerprints all over them that, you know, way that it's being commodified, the way that people look at how they brand their names or their reputation as it relates mm-hmm. to the movement. So all of this has definitely had, I think, a negative impact on how we've been able to build over these last 20, 30 years. And even when you talk about the MBUF is not where it was like 25 years ago, you know, I think there might have been like 15 chapters at that point. Mm-hmm. In most of the major cities. And we saw some things happen. I think that's why we could have such a robust presence in the anti-apartheid movement, because we had chapters that were able to carry out those campaigns. And when you look, I mean, I might be wrong, but when I look at like what national organizations exist now that have those radical roots, it's not a whole lot. They might be regional, but nationally, we just don't have it. And I think that's going to be a problem for us, going forward.
Now, one thing that is underway, is that, there has been a formation of a national liberation unity movement. And what we're trying to do, MBUF is a part of that. And it's made up of some other organizations, the, Malcolm X grassroots movement, the community movement builders, Kamal Franklin and them, the Black Workers for Justice. Some other movements, Charles Barron's group. And what we're trying to do is recreate a national movement of revolutionary nationalists or Pan-Africanists or, you know, however you want to describe that. And so that's underway. We started meeting, last year and we've had some periodic meetings. We're trying to pull that together. We'll see where it goes. As a matter of fact, the focus of our MBUF convention last year, which is in Pittsburgh, was unity within the National Liberation Movement. And we invited representatives from organizations. December 12th was there, African People's Socialist Party. And all of these folks are part of this new formation. So I think that people see a need to try to bring this movement together. The fact that individually, as organizations, none of us really have the ability to really, I think, make a real print, you know, on our people's movement individually, because all of the organizations are pretty much, local, and, you know, they may have four or five chapters at most. So, there is a need, for this unity. You know, Jamal, some of us, who are old enough go back even before MBUF, right? I came out of the, SOBU, YOBU movement. You know, and that whole.
Talk about what those acronyms are.
Huh?
Talk about those, what the acronyms
are. Oh, the, Student Organization for Black Unity, which then went to, Youth Organization for Black Unity. And of course, you know, that got off into a lot of other stuff that I'm sure you're aware of, but, you know, and I'm talking, you know, over 50 years ago, you know,
right.
And when you look back on it, and you know, I really thought at that time, you know, being young and maybe a little bit foolish, that by now, you know, if somebody asked me 50 years later, what would this movement look like? You know, I'm like, man, we're on the verge of revolution.
Right, exactly. In a couple of days.
Yeah. But, you know, I think we really have to take account of the forces that are arrayed against us and the fact that they are very, very resilient and the fact that they never intend to give up anything. Mm-hmm. Even at this point, we still have to have a certain amount of optimism that we still can do this. We can still make a change, you know? And I have that optimism and that's why we're really trying to, I know within NBOF, trying to recruit, and push the leadership, this next generation, you know, cause we're at a point now where we should be playing elders, you know, mm-hmm. not doing all this hard work.
Yeah, our minds are saying we know what to do, but our bodies are saying, no. Yeah. Because when you talk about 50 years, you think about that. Think about what we've seen. And so that's why, for me, one of the things I could say I used to have lots of, and that's patience. Mm-hmm. I don't have as much of that anymore because there's a part that says, okay, some of this stuff is new that we're experiencing, and so we have to like pivot and make some adjustments. Damn, some of it is old. This divide and conquer, all this other stuff is old. Why are we still not understanding that and having a way to have some kind of offensive that we then can move past that? And it's not going to be easy again, because we know that what that means, and we know that those folks are not, as you said, not giving up any power without a big fight. And we don't seem to have the organization right now that we need in order to really mount an offensive that's going to be transformative.
Mm-hmm. I do want to talk about the convention, if it's appropriate to get into that now.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first, can you talk about some of the campaigns that NBOF has been a part of that, you know, I would say are groundbreaking or, you know, defining in terms of
Here in Kansas City was the one of the campaigns that was national that we really worked on here in Kansas City, is African-Centered Education Movement. And here in Kansas City, you know, we developed the African-Centered Schools, and we actually had African-Centered Shule from elementary school up to high school. And, where we were able to, you know, use the African-centered curriculum that we had gotten from, Portland, the Portland model, as we call it, that was developed by, his name is escaping me.
Brandon.
Nationally,
and those people, and so
we were very successful at that for a number of years, and there were some things that happened that we sort of lost control of that. I won't get into the details here, but that was one of the big ones, and of course the support of the movements in Southern Africa was another big push, you know, and we developed the whole Durban 400 and supported that movement. What were some of the other campaigns? Well, you should remember some of them.
Yeah, well, you know, I think the youth piece was pretty critical because we all had youth organizations.
We had our Simba Fulani program here, and I know there was, you know, you all had one in Detroit, there was one in Houston, you know, so yeah, we did develop a lot of mentorship, rites of passage type programs.
Right.
Yeah. That was another thrust that we had. We also began to try to do some type of economic development. It wasn't probably what it probably should have been. I mean, I was hoping that we could do more cooperative economic type things as opposed to just buy black, you know.
Yeah. Black capitalism.
Mm-hmm. Right. But that was because we do have a long tradition of cooperative economic development in this country among black people. Mm-hmm. But we didn't push that, I don't think, as strongly as we should have. But there are a lot of things that we did accomplish around the country, and I know here in Kansas City and some of the other cities.
Things I would add, again, I just want to emphasize the youth part because all of us had a youth component locally. but we always made space for our young people at our national conventions. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the thing that they really love, if traveling and hook up with other young people.
Right.
Cause you know how it is, like, oh, we gotta do this. We don't need you doing that. But then when they go and see, okay, there's young people from Chicago, from New mm-hmm. York, mm-hmm. all doing the same thing that you've been doing, that has always been reinforcing. In fact, these young people that were part of that back during the '80s and early '90s still remember that and still would say that was an integral part of their radicalization, just being a part of that movement in those spaces.
Yeah, and some of those folks are now helping to lead NBUF now. You know, they came out of our assembly and founding programs.
Yeah. And for us, a number of them had went into education as teachers. And mm-hmm. so when you talk about the African-centered school model, that definitely was a part of it. In fact, Mickey was at a conference, and I met a young woman who remembered me. Can you imagine this? Remembered me, but she was a student at one of the Shoeways in Detroit. And so it then began to rattle my memory about the work that we had done to establish African-centered academies, particularly in Detroit and other cities. That unfortunately, again, if you don't have, it's just a matter of getting those things, you have to be able to maintain and defend.
Absolutely.
And if people don't understand the importance of that, mm-hmm. Then those other folks come in and just chip away at it. Sometimes they just come and squash, but most of the time they don't want to be too obvious, so they just keep chipping away at it, and then you don't have anything to show 10 years later, 5 years later. But the other thing I think we played a role in was electoral politics, in terms of advancing a particular view about what that means and how you mm-hmm. participate. We supported various candidates. Chokwe Lumumba was one of those folks, but we had, you know, people all around. In fact, some of our own NBUF members mm-hmm. ran for office. And so I think we felt like those particular, just economic development, youth development, electoral politics, and internationalism were places that we felt like we could have. And we did, and still do so.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about the upcoming convention. It's going to be in a few weeks.
Yeah. In fact, we're in countdown mode now, and everybody is getting panicky here. But just to say a couple of things about the convention, the theme of the convention this year is preparation for reparations, building institutions for self-sufficiency and self-determination. What we're trying to accomplish here is that, and we say preparation for reparations in the sense that, let's say that Black people did receive reparations now. Are we in a position, do we have the necessary independent institutions to really take advantage of it, you know? We talk about building a different kind of society with a different economic model, but I think people need to see something concrete that sort of shows them what you're talking about. You know, what do we have to look forward to? You know, and so what we're trying to do is focus on building independent institutions, and we're focusing on four areas: healthcare, economics, education, and food sovereignty. Those are the four areas that we're focusing on. And, our movement now, because of social media and YouTube, there's so many YouTube revolutionaries, right? You got all of these, everybody is, it's almost like they're competing for, you know, trying to promote their brand, you know. Absolutely. They talk about revolutionary stuff, but the question becomes, you know, what are you putting in place to really move this movement forward towards revolution? You know, Amilcar Cabral, and I can't remember the exact statement, but he talked about, you know, people don't thrive by ideas. You know, it's about what you do. You know, what can you put on the ground? And so what we're trying to promote is we need to begin to develop institutions, that can portend what we talk about. We talk about a different type of economic structure, you know? And so what we're focusing on is, our special guest is going to be Brother Malik Yakini from the, Detroit, Black Community Food Sovereignty Network. I don't know if you're familiar with what they have done.
Oh
there,
yeah, definitely.
But they've opened up, and I can't think of the exact name of this center, but it's anchored by a grocery store, a cooperatively owned grocery store. It's a $22 million structure, and it serves a need. And Brother Malik, basically has sort of guided in the direction of food sovereignty. That's what he's going to talk about. It's not just a grocery store, but the question is, how can we actually build some type of independence? And, because, you know, the food industry in this country, as every capitalist industry is, it's about making profit. So we're getting fed, you know, stuff that barely resembles food, you know, all this processed food, food that's full of chemicals. You know, you've got these chickens that are twice the size that they used to be, you know, and so the question is, not only do we have what we call food deserts in our community, but some of the food that we get is really not healthy. And so how do we build something that's sustainable, where we can provide nutritious food to our communities? And that's what they were able to do in Detroit. I mean, this was a 14, 15 years in the making. This didn't happen overnight, but they have a $22 million structure there. Like I said, it's anchored by a grocery store. It's cooperatively owned. They have two or three commercial kitchens in the facility. They have meeting space and so we're trying to see, is that something that possibly can be replicated, you know, around the country? And so he's going to do two presentations. He's going to be our feature speaker at our opening rally, which is Friday, July the 12th. And in there, he's going to really talk about the whole philosophy behind food sovereignty and some of the pitfalls of capitalist food production and what we need to do to combat that and how this is all a process of part of our national liberation movement. You know, it's not just trying to have a grocery store, but this is part of our liberation movement. And then, he's going to do a plenary session on that Saturday, where he's going to talk about how the nuts and bolts of how they built that, right? Because we're going to be featuring some of the local urban growers here. As a matter of fact, one of our workshops is going to be on food sovereignty, where we're going to have presentations for some of our local, urban growers. And we have some here in Kansas City and more are being developed, as an alternative. And one of the things that I want them to see is that, you know, We can do something like that here in Kansas City. And it's going to take time. It's going to take some collaborative effort. And so we have to kind of stop this competition, you know, cause you got all these little groups that's trying to compete with each other, trying to compete for the same money and that kind of thing. And we really need to deal more collectively and cooperatively in our enterprises, and also try to deal more on a cooperative basis, you know, cooperative ownership, a different type of, you know, trying to just put in place at a rudimentary level, a different type of economic structure, you know, to let people see this is what we're talking about. We talk about, you know, what we mean by liberation. You know, some people are scared of the term socialism and that kind of thing, but we talk about cooperative economics, you know, and so we're doing that, in economics. We're going to feature the, Development Credit Union, which is a community-owned credit union here in Kansas City that came from the work of the Black United Front. This was something that was 8 years in the making, because you got to deal with so many federal regulations when you're trying to build a credit union. But the credit union opened last year. Ajamu Webster, who was our chair, was one of the main people that shepherded this to fruition. And so now we have the Redevelopment Credit Union that serves the Black community. And people can stop having to rely on these check cashing places, because they don't have the necessary credit to get loans. And it's open and it is community owned. And again, it's an example of, what we can do independently to try to have something independent, you know, in the community. Healthcare, we're doing the same thing. There's a group here called Uzazi Village. And what they're trying to do is get off the hospital grid, you know, because hospitals are basically, you know, profit motive operations.
Keeping you sick so they can profit.
Right. Cause if you know, people are well, you know, they go out of business, the pharmaceuticals, right? So they deal mostly with maternal care. They have doulas and they deal with maternal care, but it's an example of how you can try to develop your own culturally sensitive, healthcare institution, right? where you can do things other than just push pills. You know, I have a black doctor that I like, but I swear if I go to her for anything, she's got a pill for everything.
Right,
you know?
Right.
She never asked me, well, Mickey, what do you eat? What's your diet like? You know, and right. That's what's killing us, you know?
Right.
So Uzaz is sort of a self-contained, healthcare institution for mothers, you know, and pregnant mothers. So it's an example, you know, of what we're trying to talk about. We talk about independence in healthcare. And the same with education, we're going to have a presentation, a virtual presentation from the head of the Whole Living Academy. That's a independent African Senate institution. It's where it's a virtual school. And, so they're going to talk about the importance of, you know, we've gotten used to this term, centered education, but I like to call it liberation education, you know, because a lot of times I know one of the things I look critical about our African-centered approach is that it focused on, antiquity, you know, and all of the great things that we did in the past, which is very important to know. But what about what's going on now, you know, in Africa? You know, we're going to talk about African-centered. You know, what about the liberation struggles? You know, how are people learning about Nkrumah and Thomas Sankara and you know, and Winnie Mandela and those folks, you know? So we're talking about education for liberation, and that's the theme of our education component. And we're having a separate, youth component for the young people. The young people are developing their own agenda. That's still a work in progress right now, but they'll be having their separate, workshops and dealing with the things that affect young people. So, those are the components of the Action Convention. Now, the other thing that we're bringing back the African Heritage Ball this year. Black United Front used to sponsor African Heritage Balls in years past. You know, it's just a chance where it was a fundraiser on the one hand, but it was a chance for black people to, you know, put on their finest African garb and come out and have fun and party and that kind of thing. So, the Saturday night of the convention, we're bringing back the African Heritage Ball. And then, on Sunday, as you know, at NBUF conventions, there's always sort of a spiritual, component to it. And we're going to do that at a place called the Leia Center, which is sort of a spiritual center city here where they deal with, just trying to create a wholesome individual. They may do yoga. They may do massages. They sell herbal products and that kind of thing. And so we're going to have a spiritual circle. And the sisters she's called it, African spirituality in a safe African places. You know, I'm not the most spiritual person, but, I think that, you know, our people are very spiritual, not so much, I'm not talking religion, I'm just talking about spirituality, you know, internal thing. And so we're going to have that component. So those are all the components that we have planned for the convention. I think I've covered most of everything.
Right. So if you're just joining us, this is Jamala Rogers, your host of Voices from the Battlefield, and we're talking to Mickey Dean, who is one of the NBUF founders and leaders in Kansas City, Missouri, and they're going to be hosting the national gathering in next month. And so you have time to get your coins together, make plans to drive up there. There's a website that you can register, but that's where we are.
Let me just say that the website is NBUF.net, NBUF.net. You go to NBUF.net, you'll see all the information on the convention. About how you can participate. You can do registration on the convention. You can buy tickets to the African Heritage Ball. So everything, that you need to know about the convention is on NBUF.net, as well as contact information if you have, any questions about anything.
The things as we've been talking, Mickey, that I keep coming back to that I think our movement is still fairly weak on, and that is the political education. Because with each one of those components that you talked about, we have to re-educate our people about what that means. So even the way that we eat requires us to talk about food in a different kind of way. Even talk about reparations, we have to re-educate people about what our worth is to this country, what our sacrifice has been for this country, so that people understand what that fight is all about. And so I think we are competing with, you know, the magnitude of social media, to get those ideas across. but it also means that we need going back to some olden tribe ways of how we organize our people, and that's block to block, person to person. because we're not gonna be able to compete with, you know, the folks who got the social media platforms. We certainly use them as best we can, but nothing is going to take the place of us meeting and talking with people, seeing if they understand, to engage in those kind of difficult discussions. Because I'm telling you, we get a number of people on the show talking about reparations, and each time I realize how much more work there is to be done to get our folks to understand this, because this is a prime opportunity when the most that I've ever seen us talk about reparation in a meaningful way, not just abstract. Because I think, you know, when we first started talking about in 1972, what that meant, it was so abstract that people were like, oh, we'll never get it. You know, this is a symbolic kind of thing. No. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, hearing people who are doing the work in their various cities, it's actually taking on a life. And so for us to be ready, because you posed a question early on, like, if we got reparations, what would we do? How would our lives be different? And we have to have those kinds of conversations so that understand it's more than aspirations. Like, what work are we willing to do to build something new and different that is sustainable and that affirms us as African people?
Yeah. One of the things I should point out is that, you know, we have a very vigorous reparations movement here in Kansas City. We have, everything was initiated by our Kansas City Reparations Coalition, which was initiated by NBUF, by the way. And we also were able, through the coalition, to develop a mayor's commission on reparations that, was just funded by the city to the tune of, I think, $356,000, to get this research done. But, you know, a large part of the reparations that we've been talking about is what's owed us and what's due us. But we also have to focus on what Conrad used to like to talk about, internal reparations, right? I mean, we've been psychologically damaged, you know, over the years. And so how do we address that? You know, because even when we talk about, you know, we talk about the fact that psychologically we have to have ways to sort of free our minds, as the expression used to be, because, we just consumed by, this whole capitalist centered propaganda and what we think success is and those kind of things. So we have a lot of work, and this is something that we can only do for ourselves. This is not nothing we ask other folks to do for us. We got to do this for ourselves, to deal with this issue of internal reparations. So we always want to make people aware that that's a key component of reparations, because that way we sort of know what to do with what we have and to try to do an assessment of what we have in our communities. And again, how to build those institutions that are beneficial to us, those independent type institutions, those cooperative institutions. And so internal reparations is a key part of the reparations movement.
And it almost has to be, because if you give me a pot of money and I have no idea of my roots, my future, only that I am a consumer, mm-hmm. and I can buy now what I want, not what I need, what I want, what I've always wanted, then I have created anything sustainable, because in a matter of time, those dollars would have drifted back to, you know, the capitalist system, and we still won't have anything to show for it. So I think for us to understand what reparations is all about, yeah, we should get a check individually, but then systemically, what are we going to create so that in 10, 15, 20 years, 50 years, we can say, here's what our children are, children can expect. And to me, that's a number of possibilities. Maybe we will have a region of our own. Maybe we will have a state of our own. But wherever we are, we should be able to thrive, you know, psychologically, spiritually, economically, and politically. And right now, we know that it's not.
So you want to go back to those five states we asked for years ago?
Yeah, a number of groups have asked for those five states. And, you know, I've been talking about those five states because there's been a lot more discussion based on, and I think it's based on reparations, about the land loss to black people. And you know, I hope to do a show about this soon, because I don't think people understand the amount of land, even in spite of the land that was stolen from us. And this theft has gone on all to modern day. I mean, it's being stolen. But we still have a lot of land. And so what is going on with that, and how can we maintain it? And so, and a lot of it is in the South.
But I think, one of the things that our movement, and this is what we're really trying to focus on in this convention, that our movement has to get back to, is the fact that you have to meet the needs of the people. It just can't be rhetoric. I mean, that's something we learned from the Black Panther Party. And even before that, I know one example we have here in Kansas City is that early on when we got started, there was a minister that we felt politically was trying to head our people in what we thought was not the correct direction, right? But this minister at his church, he provided food, he provided childcare. Folks were going to listen to him, right? All we had was rhetoric at the time. And it was at that point that we said, trying to understand Cabral's point about, people
can't do services to the people.
Right. That even before we knew that, theoretically, we began to realize that if we're not meeting people's needs, why are they going to listen to us, you know?
But here's the thing I think that we haven't quite figured out, Nikki. The people have been set up for what they need or ask for what they need. They never see us as having the power to create what they need. Mm-hmm. And so I think for us, see how people manipulate them by saying, oh, here's this, here's that, but you gotta do this. Mm-hmm. We haven't quite figured out how can we bring them in, provide what they need, as opposed to all of us looking like social services, where you just come and we're giving you a basket, or you come mm-hmm. and you get a gift card. I don't think we've just figured that piece mm-hmm. out. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. And again, that's why what we're trying to focus on is in this convention is building independent, determining institutions, things that we control. So it's not, you know, we're not talking about, charity, you know, but trying to, you know, institution building is something that I just really believe in terms of, if we're talking about any type of revolutionary change, we've got to show people that this is what we're talking about, right? Mm-hmm. Look at this particular economic instance. Look at this food sovereignty piece. Look at this healthcare piece. This is what we're talking about. There's another way to do this, you know? And I don't care what you call it. I mean, we can call it cooperative economics or whatever, but I think that we can clearly demonstrate the problems with capitalist society, where everything is for profit. You know, what are you talking about? Housing. Why don't we have affordable housing? Because housing is for profit. What's wrong with our food system? Well, it's all for profit. You know, healthcare, it's all for profit. You know, and people can see, what has happened to us when you have a profit-oriented system. So it's not like that, these things are not evident, right? We just have to be able to, one, point it out, but at the other time, show people some type of alternative, because I strongly believe, Jamal, that if we don't have some type of, systems in place to show what we were talking about, and it's meeting people's needs at the same time, while not only you meet people's needs, but you're educating them about why you're doing it this way as opposed to that way, I think that's what leads to revolutionary change. And I just see, you know, I remember I was telling you about this new unity movement that we started, and one of the first arguments was over, well, are we revolutionary nationalists? You know, are we socialists? Are we? I mean, I'm like, y'all, we did this 50 years ago, you know? You know, I mean, let's get past that. You know, what are we doing on the ground for our people, and how are we, building that into this revolutionary movement that we're talking about? We can't keep, arguing over these ideological battles that, I mean, we were good at that once upon a time, but, you know, where it got us.
I'm thinking to that point, and it's an excellent one, and that is maybe why our folks don't have the kind of confidence and respect for us that they need to have, because some of us have engaged in these ideological, debates that really don't move us. They don't move the needle. They just show how sharp you are in articulating a particular view. And our folks would wonder, okay, y'all supposed to be so sharp and so smart. Where what have you built lately? And so I think both of us come out of a tradition of institution building is key. I mean, you were in Sabu, I was in the Congress of African People. That's a major new talk. You gotta build an institution. You can't build and maintain that. You're just blowing in the wind. Mm-hmm. And so for me, that's a very important feature of my community organizing, my activism, because if we don't have anything to show the people that's working, why would they follow us?
Right. Absolutely.
I know I wouldn't. I'm looking over there. I got rent to be paid and, you know, I'm riding the bus and you talking about, hey, here, come to this meeting. What? Huh? Well, a meeting is going to last 3 hours and after that you don't have nothing to show for it. No, I'm not coming.
I think we
have to transform the way that we talk about racism. Mm-hmm. And it can't be in this abstract intellectual way. We have to talk about it in ways that our people understand it and that they're moved to join us. Cause that's what it's all about. And they just continue to do this work on our own. It's like we're asking, inviting you to come be a party of our liberation, your liberation. And that message, I think we need to work on a little bit.
Great. I agree. That's where we are. So
in these few moments left, Nikki, recap the dates, what we hope to experience when we get to Kansas City, and leave people with that information. And know that it will be on my particular website if people forget the website, that you have, because I know it's a confusing website because I keep messing up and going to the old one and it'll tell me, this ain't it.
.net.
So talk about the website, but also what people can expect when they come.
Well, the website is nbuf.net, nbuf.net. That's the current website, and that's where you can get all the information on the convention, which will be held July the 12th through the 14th here in Kansas City. That's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And the theme, as I said, is preparations for reparations, building institutions for self-sufficiency and self-determination. And that's really going to be the focus on the importance of building independent institutions in the Black community so that we can take advantage of whatever reparatory justice that we receive, so that we can make use of it. But without having our own institutions, all of this is going to go for naught. And we're focusing on those four areas: food sovereignty, healthcare, education, and economics. And we're talking about doing all of that in a cooperative, collective manner, as opposed to being profit-centered, but really, how do we work collectively? How do we not necessarily have to compete with each other? You know, we've got so many good programs around the city, whether it's urban gardens, whether it's youth programs, economic type programs. But what we find ourselves is that we're all going after the same pot of money. We fighting with each other, you know, rather than trying to say, well, you know, what if we, you know, put some of this together. Not that we have to merge everybody's organizations, but at least develop some type of collective framework so that we're not competing with each other, you know, and trying to understand how to do things cooperatively, where it's owned by everybody, you know, rather than one or two people trying to get wealthy. So that's kind of the focus. We're going to have some fun with the African Heritage Ball. We're going to do that. And of course, Malika Keeney, from the, Detroit, Black Sovereignty Network is going to be our future guest, and he's going to talk about what they've been able to recreate in Detroit, not only the nuts and bolts of it, but also the philosophy behind it and how that fits into our overall liberation movement. So what we want people to come away from this convention with is the notion that it's very important in order to change society that we have to start at the ground level, building these types of institutions, being able to sustain those institutions and see how those institutions can develop into some revolutionary energy. Well, you know, we really can change society, you know, at some point in time in history, right?
And so that,
you know, the young people now, you know, when we were back in 1969 and 70 saying, you know, what's going to look like 50 years from now? They will, 50 years from now, they will be saying, hey, you know, we're doing the same thing.
Right. And where have we gone in 100 years by that time?
Yeah.
So these areas, I think, are critical areas that need to be explored and people be given, you know, models to go from so that when they go back to their respective cities, they can say, I saw how this worked. I saw how this brother and others built this institution. I see that there is not a mention of the November elections, which, you know, most people see as a constitutional election. Is that intentional, or do you see some of that, how the way that we look at the elections going forward, embedded in the discussion around some of these other critical topics?
You know, I won't say it's intentional, but it's just not one of the things that we focus on. You know, I worked with, you know, some people that were trying to form an alternative, National Black Radical Political Convention. We've actually had a couple of conventions, but that focuses on electoral politics because it's, you know, people have said that the revolutionary national movement has sort of conceded, you know, electoral politics to the Democrats or whatever. And I know, like you mentioned in Inbuff, you know, we've had members on the city council. We've had members on the school board. You know, I mean, we focus on local elections. Right. We actually had one person in state legislature once, but you know, we do focus on electoral politics. But you know, I just think that, you know, this upcoming election is one that we'd have to take a whole nother day to talk about, you know, because of this whole thing about, well, we got to stop Trump at all costs, you know? But I don't think sometimes that we really take a hard look at, this political system. The fact that, the corporate elite pours billions of dollars into these electoral races. And all of that, you know, and of course now the courts have basically allowed them to put as much money into these races as they want. And this whole system is manipulated. You know, if you take polls of the majority of American people on things like, Medicaid for all type situation, you know, United Healthcare, just some sensible, policies on gun violence, background checks. I mean, the majority of the people really, want to see things in a different way, but because politicians are bought and paid for by the corporates, the lobbyists, you know, you're going to get you're not going to get universal health care because the pharmaceuticals and industry don't want it. There's going to be money continue to go to the war industry, what they call the defense industry, but the war industry because there's profit in that, you know. People talk about why should we be worried about what's going on in Palestine? Well, the fact that the reason you can't have a daycare center is because all this money is going to Israel, you know? And we have to connect, make those kind of connections. So, So I think that, I forgot where we started on this, but.
So it was around whether or not you all intentionally did not.
That's not a component of this convention in terms of how to deal with this upcoming election. So, I don't say it's something that we just didn't address.
So I think some of us have been saying, regardless who wins, we still have to organize because the system is still in place. And as you so eloquently pointed out, all those issues that we want to have some change in is related to the capitalist system being maintained. And so how do we still have pull out some reforms for relief for our people, in spite of that? So I also think that when you start looking a little bit deeper and organizing in a certain kind of way around the four or five critical issues you mentioned, there is something you will have to interact with the electoral system. And so we need to be knowledgeable about that. So if you have a state rep, then you can go to Brother Daniels and say, hey, brother, this is what we need on the state level in order for our program to work here. Or you could go to Mayor Lucas and say, here's what we need, or on the school board, here's a policy that we like. So they are a part of it, but if you don't have anybody there,
I agree.
And help on the inside while you do the outside, you know, organizing, it makes it very, very difficult. So I think to your point about making the connections so that people see how all of this stuff, you can call it an entanglement if you want, but if you don't see the connections of how all these interlocking systems keep us oppressed, and it's going to be hard to just keep banging your head because you don't know what that invisible web is. You just keep banging your head. Well, this is a good, you know, issue, but we can't seem to. Well, that's because all these forces that you can't see have, like, you know, this impenetrable wall down that you keep hitting. and bumping your head. So it's not just about having a great idea that is going to benefit people. You have to have a deeper understanding of the system to overcome it.
Absolutely.
Hey, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. It's always good to visit with an old friend.
Yes, yes, yes. A nice conversation. And, you know, we'll continue to pump up the MBUF convention. If people can't remember that website, they know that they can always go to JamalRogers.com. We'll have a event flyer on there so you can get all the information.
Yeah.
Brother Malik, you got to see what he's done, him and his people there. Because I think it's, as you said, it's so important. A working model.
Mm-hmm.
Then they can believe that it's possible.
Yeah.
And as long as it's a concept or a dream, yeah, we're going to keep dreaming. But some people are actually realizing it's actualizing it. And it's hard work. It ain't no doubt about it. It's hard work. You got to be totally committed, disciplined. But we got people in our movement doing it.
There won't be any ideological battles at the convention. So if that's what you're looking for, you'll be at the wrong place. You know,
right.
Running the line, you know.
Right. So we'll continue to pump it up. And, again, thank you for the work of MBUF, continuing the work of liberation of our people. And there are groups doing it. And that's what our show is really about, to show people that there is not this isolated thing. People are doing the work. It may not be to the fullest that folks would like to see, but that is only going to happen when folks join up and make it a robust kind of movement that we are been trying to build for decades. Mm-hmm. We'll see you on the battlefront. Thank you for joining us. We got some announcements to make. We really want to thank Mickey Dean for us
today. All righty. Thank you so much.
All right. A lot of information. And we hope that some of you that trek to Kansas City for the 45th anniversary of the National Black Panther Front. We have a couple of other announcements to make, some upcoming events here in St. Louis. One of them is the MOJA session for the Organization for Black Struggle, and that's a community forum that will be on Project 2025. And that is the conservative think to their initiative beyond election. And so you don't want to miss that. Have some great lists. Myself will be on there. Also, Representative Romo, as well as from CWA, Local 65, because these are some of the constituent groups that are going to be negatively impacted by Project 2025. The other thing that's coming up is, if you did get to see the last episode, performances of the Black, we got another chance. This is going to be the last production of the season. It is called King Hedley, and it is from June 19th through July 14th. Now, let me just say, it sounds like it might be Shakespearean production, but it is not. You know how we name our kids, King, Queen, Prince, Princess. So this is brother is named King Hedley. So you have to see that one. The other thing that's coming up is, you know, our friends from Empower Missouri are having their annual advocacy lunch. And that's going to be June 29th at 612 North 2nd Street, and that is 612 U. That's the name of the venue. And this is where they recognize some of the advocates in our community on our behalf. Also, St. Louis is having New Sounds. It's a benefit concert. That's going to be on June 20th, and you don't want to miss that either. Because it's a local talent and some national talent that will be featured there. And so don't want to miss that either. All of this on my website. And you know that any other shows that you missed, you can always go to 6projects.com. And you can pick up radio shows or some that you want to rehear or receive. So,
Right now. we don't need to process fight. We got to do it. We got to get it right. We got to get it right. Right now, we don't need to process fight. We got to do it.
Our homeland cries. It cries for freedom.
Right now, we don't need to stop. We got to do it. We don't need to stop. No procrastination.
We've got to do it right.